Hello everyone, I'm your host Andrea Weckerly, and welcome to the Ready Living Podcast, where each episode is designed to educate, inspire, and empower you to create the life you want. My guest today is Paul Young. He's the head of sustainability at GitHub, leading initiatives to achieve water positivity and 100% renewable electricity by 2025 and carbon negativity by 2030. Previously, he was a GTM and partnerships lead for the since disbanded climate product team at Meta, including working as acting product manager for the regeneration vertical. Over 9 years working at Meta, he also led the nonprofit partnership team as they raised the first $1 billion on Facebook and built the product partnerships function at Instagram, joining Instagram as the third hire on their partnership team. Paul is passionate about his family, being a climate dad, watching Australian rugby at the Olympics, and leveraging AI advancements for climate impact. Welcome, Paul.
Stoked to be chatting with you. It's so nice to see you.
I'm really excited you're here today because you're a great example of someone who makes a positive difference both professionally, as we just heard, and also personally. But before we dive into that, I want to talk a little bit about something I didn't mention in the introduction, namely that you also go by the moniker, the Prince of the Positive. Tell us about that.
Yeah, so that's been my Twitter bio for the whole time I've been on Twitter, which is probably something like 20 years, like since Twitter pretty much started. And it was a take on, there was a quote about, I think it was a Richard Nixon quote, nattering nabobs of negativism, that Constant Basturio, who was a friend of both of ours, an early comms blogosphere legend, had shared with me. And so I went with the alliteration of pontificating Prince of the Positive for Twitter, and it just landed. But I came up with it as on a whim and it kind of stuck. But for me, positivity is a value. But I think my brain chemistry is somewhat misaligned in that, like, I you know, if you ask people on a scale of 1 to 10, like, how positive they feel about things, like, I'm nearly always at the 10, and I have to, like, actively catch myself not seeing the lining on every cloud. You know, like, sometimes my wife has a issue that she'll talk through with me or a friend, and I have a strong bias of being like, well, on the positive side.
I think that's a wonderful trait to have, and it is something, I mean, you and I have known each other for over 15 years now, I think.
Yeah, probably nearly 20.
Seeing that positive aspect, I mean, that's something that's always come through in your work and also engaging with you personally. I think we all need more of that. So I think that's a really great foundation to dive into the rest of this stuff. Your educational background is originally in communications, PR, and marketing, and you could have gone into a million directions with that, but you chose to build a career around innovation for social good.
Having a positive impact on the world has been part of me since the earliest days. My father is a veterinarian, and I lived the first years of my life in the vet surgery. And so I think, like, as a small child, every day I saw people come in with sick animals that dad helped. And I think you can't have a more specific, clear understanding of, like, helping people than that as a child. So I just always had this bent that way. I fell into a comms degree because when I was at high school, I'd been organizing blood drives for the blood service, just as, you know, I don't know, I've been encouraging.
Are you a donor? Were you a donor too?
Yeah. Always have been. Critically important. I actually had to get blood transfusions last year after a medical thing, and really learn how valuable it is. So if you've never given blood, or if you need to, go give blood. It's great. It was a spare time thing I've been doing in high school. And the guy that ran it, we wound up having the best program in the whole state. And the guy that ran it was the comms guy. And he was like, you should think about this as a career. And I didn't know what comms was. And I signed up for one of them in a PR degree in country Australia. I remember I turned up to my first lecture and there was only two other men in the class out of about 60. And I was like, oh, did I do a girls course? And then it was interesting. So I did a PR degree and started learning about theories of communication. And it was just as, like, social media was just starting to blow up in Australia. And what was interesting was I was using these, like, mainly I'm a big rugby fan. I was in all these rugby forums, and it was way more interesting, the rugby forums, than, like, the weekly news media about the rugby that I was passionate about. And I felt like I was seeing in real time, like, I didn't want to do media relations. I was more interested in social media. And so I started a blog to work out what a blog was. And then that led me to eventually come into the States. And then I worked in a social media agency, my first job, but in my spare time, again, I got involved with a nonprofit called Charity Water. Because I had a September birthday and they had a campaign, give up your September birthday for clean water. And I fundraised for them for a while. And then they had a job to run digital. And I think multiple people sent it to me when they saw it on their Twitter and were like, wait, you love these guys. This is you. And I went there and spent 5 years and then, yeah, my everything went from there. So I think it was, I always had this bent towards having a positive social impact from being a child. And then innovation was what interested me most in the career. And then the two sort of aligned over time.
And it worked out beautifully, obviously. Yeah. Your specific focus now is on sustainability and climate change. And as a dual citizen, American-Australian, how do you see these things being addressed in the two countries? How do the cultural environments influence what action can and is being taken in the United States and Australia?
Yeah. Yeah. And so climate, I've been on a path with climate for about a decade now. And I'm not an environmental scientist. I'm not a carbon accountant. Like, I didn't study environmental science degree. But I think for me, it's always been about like system change and having the most positive impact and trying to get down to the most important problems. That's why I worked in water. A billion people without clean drinking water was very fundamental. And if you got water, everything got better. And when I worked for Charity Water, I was in northern Ethiopia once and I was talking to our teams who help bring people clean water in remote northern Ethiopia. And I was asking them, like, what do you need? I was trying to like check my assumptions, like, you know, make sure I wasn't like the white savior complex coming in and with money and an idea.
Right. And
they told me that like their rainy season had changed and it was creating all these problems. And that was the first inkling. I'd read about this climate change thing in the news about 15 years ago. And I realized that there was more to it. And I started self-educating. And the more educated I got, the more I was like, this is the most pressing challenge of our time. The most important thing that can be done in our generation is tackling this for future generations. And that's only become bigger as I've become a parent. To go back to your question about the US and Australia, it's interesting. US and Australia are, I would say, very similar in terms of how I would see where climate is positioned. And what we see globally, we used to do when I was at Meta, and they still do it, a partnership with Yale's Climate Change Communication Program, where they did a global survey through Facebook for how people thought about climate. And what they found was that people overall around the globe are extremely worried about climate, especially women, especially people in the developing world. Like they're going to cop the worst quicker. And there's only a very, very small niche that doesn't believe this to be true or an issue. Very, very small. And the US and Australia has those small pieces. In Australia, we have an economy that rides on the back of mining and fossil fuels. So it makes sense. In the US, there's, you know, certain small pockets that don't believe that climate's a big issue. But the main issue is people don't know what to do and it can feel paralyzing and worrying. And so where I've come in is that there are solutions all around us that actually make the world better and make sense. Like you can save money and have a better life. And like it's fun for me to ride around on my e-bike with my kid on the back. It's like a more fun way to go down to the beach than to take my car down, which is an EV. And my EV, I don't have to pay for fuel. I plug it in. So there's these good solutions. They just need to come as fast as possible. The one thing I would say that's been different recently, though, was our last federal election in Australia, we had a huge climate movement. We called it the Teal Movement. And there was a number of seats in our House of Representative that were won by independents who they weren't part of a party, but they all were pro-climate. And it was seen as climate being a really key thing. A lot of these seats went from the traditionally right-wing party to these independents who were very forward on climate. And I think it came in the back of Australia's bushfires. Like we lived through months of seeing our country get burned down and the election went climate ways. Now in the US, we're in an election year that's going to be critical and who knows which way we're going to go. There's many, many factors, but for climate, it's critically important. You know, we just had a party that has pushed out the Inflation Reduction Act, which has been probably the single most important global piece of climate legislation that's ever existed. And a party that, you know, who knows what they'll actually do, but there's some stuff out there about even defunding the sources of data we get to understand climate to try to tackle this problem. So, there's a lot of similarities between the US and Australia, but generally people believe in this, they care about it, they're worried about it, they don't know what to do, and there's so much that all of us can do.
Right. I think what we really need to do is make sure that our local leaders, our political leaders, our social leaders are people who understand the seriousness of climate change and are willing to take the action that's needed and bring along the population.
Better transport infrastructure, you know, plant more trees in your neighborhood, support local and state subsidies for clean energy, stop subsidizing fossil fuels locally. There's so much. But yes, I love that point.
you've worked at and with some of the biggest tech companies in the world. And I know a lot of people are frustrated by the misinformation that's shared on some social media platforms around a variety of topics, including environmental issues. Who, in your opinion, are the companies, tech or otherwise, that are doing the best job around climate change information and helping elevate climate voices?
Yeah, great question. And I come this from a point of view of being like, I am a climate person, right? So for me, like, I want to see the best standards from everyone. So when I think about this, the one area where I've seen great hope here is I'm an advisor to the Hollywood Climate Summit, which is a yearly gathering of all media types to help climate communications and kind of the climate and storytelling communities come together. And the thing that I've heard time and again from people in the climate space is that they really need storytelling. They really need people to understand this and get inspired. It's so important. And, you know, climate people are scientists and accountants, and they're not natural storytellers. And so there's so much need there. The company I think that is doing it best is Netflix. Emma Stewart is their sustainability lead. I've seen her speak a number of times. I admire her and her team. They both have an amazing internal program where, you know, they're working to decarbonize all their sets and support nature, but they also think about the storytelling. So I was just at a conference with her, seeing her speak in San Diego, and she was talking about how Netflix has categorized all these, you know, like kind of climate and environment films, and is helping to find ways to elevate those. Like, you know, we all saw Don't Look Up. It was one of the most watched films through their platform. Like, that's an example. There's great nature documentaries. There's all sorts of things. They're also doing some cool work. Like, you know, if you don't have climate in a script these days, it's science fiction, is a quote I've heard, because it's everywhere. And so
brilliant.
It's like, yeah,
brilliant.
I forget exactly who said that. It was someone through the Hollywood Climate Summit, but whoever you are out there, great quote. And so, you know, it makes sense that if there's a scene that's being shot on a roof, like, why wouldn't they stand next to solar panels? Why wouldn't the cars be EVs? Like, I think in The Watchmen, every car was an EV, and it was kind of noted, but now it should just be everywhere, because, like, you drive around LA and half the cars are EVs, and that's what we're going to see hopefully very soon. So Netflix do a great job. We had a crack at this when I was at Meta, but I think they disbanded the team that was doing it, my team. So I don't think there's anything positive happening there. And I think the other issue is climate's seen as political, which makes sense. It is a major election issue, but we have to have these debates. It's critically important. So when I see things like Instagram now has a default feature to opt you out of political commentary for Instagram and Threads, and climate is largely seen as political or even accidentally in the systems. Like, I hope Meta is paying attention to that and is working on it in some way, because I know we were thinking about it, but I know a lot of those people lost their jobs. So, you know, that's the kind of things that really matter, because we do need to be talking. We need to be talking about these solutions in particular. That's the most important thing, because there's research out there that shows one of the number one things that can drive up solar in a neighborhood is seeing more neighbors with solar. Like, when I go home to Australia, rooftop solar is everywhere. And then I come back to even LA, and like I look at it, I go on a hike and I look across and I'm like, wow, why don't all these houses have solar panels on the roof? We're the sunniest city in America. So it's, these things matter. But yeah, Netflix, I would say, current leader. I don't know. I see bits and pieces from other companies. I think they could be doing a lot better in terms of elevating climate voices.
You're the father of two young children. And you were saying that you've been involved with climate change for, you know, long, long amount of time now, but how did becoming a parent inform your work and the type of things you now consider are important?
Yeah, it massively impactful. I think every parent feels this, because when you look at the projections, you just look at the science and you see where we are right now. Like, Jasper, Canada burned down yesterday. We see these extreme weather events. We're about to enter a crazy hurricane season. Like who knows what's next? The temperature alerts I'm seeing every day in different countries, whether it's Spain or India, are just off the chain. Like, the weather's weird now at the level of warming we have. And we have pretty high level warming baked in just from the amount of carbon that's in the atmosphere, driven by, you know, 100 years of fossil fuels getting burned. 2050 is one thing, you know, for me. I should still be here in 2050, but my kids are going to be in the prime of their life. Yeah, I was just doing some math. 2050, yeah. Definitely, I should be here. My kids will be like a bit younger than me then, and so they'll be starting their own families. And at 2050, the climate science, it's worrying. 2100, that's my kids' kids being my age. Like, I won't be here. But when I look backwards, I look back, my grandfather, He, when he was 8 years old, worked in a coal mine in Australia. And they go down with a horse and they'd pull out coal, and he would help guide the horse, an eight-year-old child. And that coal got burned and it's still sitting in the atmosphere. You know, the outputs of that. Granddad's long gone, but the distance of granddad at 8 year old from me now is the same to my grandkids. And the world, if we don't take drastic climate action, is worrying for them. We're lucky that we're rich Westerners. It's even more worrying for, you know, look at the subcontinent, like Bangladesh, maybe, you know, these kind of countries, it's going to be really difficult, and that's going to create more political uncertainty. Like the migration now is creating issues, like imagine where it's going. So it really is highly tangible when you think about your kids' future. These numbers aren't off in the distance. And so you're like, oh, wow, well, I need to do stuff now, or my kids are going to look at me and be like, this is the mess you left us with.
You were talking about migration, climate-induced migration, and it obviously is a political issue. It does impact us economically, socially, politically, you know, you name it, existentially. So I completely agree with you. I think these are huge concerns, and parents who love their children would be wise to really start clamoring for political change in this regard and saying that this isn't yes. just a question of us being able to say, well, let's wait and see. These things need to happen now because we're already right now feeling the effects of what's happening out there. I mean, we just surpassed the hottest month, I think, in human history. Yep. Is that right?
Yep. And it's just going to keep happening because we have this gas in the atmosphere. Not much is getting drawn down. More is going up. You know, we're emitting more carbon every day. So that's just science. That's what happens. The world's in a blanket and we keep adding to the blanket. The other thing, though, is so the time scale really matters. And that's what changes when you have a kid. But a lot of these actions right now make a better neighborhood for your kids. Like, it's better for the kids if there's more bike lanes around and it's bike safe. Like, I wish my kids could bike around in LA. It's better if there's more trees in our neighborhood that they can have shade under and that they can have cleaner air. If we have more EVs on the road, I live in LA, there's less smog that they have to breathe, and which is really bad for kids' development. If I don't use a gas stove in my house, like there's more and more research showing you burn the gas stove, it's a leading driver of kids' asthma. I got this little electric induction plate from Amazon, cost $100. That's what I do most of my cooking on, because even with the hood fan on, the window open, like I just don't want my kids breathing in that stuff. Coal's the number one thing that we should stop as soon as possible and replace. So, you know, these things can give immediate benefits to you and your kids and your families, whilst also having the massive benefit for your kids later. So it's kind of a no-brainer. There's just very, very strong vested interests in not taking action. These aren't easy changes too. So there is things like green premiums, and it's not all perfect, but there's a path that's full of hope that we can start doing now that should really, will measurably make a difference for our kids. And so to me, it's kind of a no-brainer, but that's why I spend all my time on it.
So we're talking about family here, and you talked about the induction and the EV and the bicycles. What other things are you doing at the Young household to live and manifest a climate-friendly existence?
The good thing is, like, a lot of this stuff's pretty measurable, and so you kind of start with the most impact. What I think about, like, first and foremost, we're registered voters, and every candidate will vote for it. Every level will understand their climate policies. And I will always vote for the more climate positive candidate. The Environmental Voters Project has a great resource for that. You can research it. But I want to know from my local candidate, like, where do they stand on these issues and do they care about it? Then it gets into the big things. And the most important is how you keep your house powered and cool and warm, and how do you get around? And so for us, we're an EV and a hybrid family. We were one hybrid, two e-bike family for a long time. We got an extra EV with the extra child. We have solar panels on the roof. So we use primarily green power. I just looked at my power bill. I had a $20 power bill because I produced more solar than the house used, even charging two EVs. The next plan is to get off gas entirely. It's expensive, so we've just waited on that. So I've replaced my gas stove with using this induction plate, and we have a gas hot water heater, and God, I hate it. I can't wait to get an electric one, but it went out, and I wasn't set up putting the electric one. And so we had to get a new one because my wife was like, I will leave you if you make us wait 2 weeks for hot water because of your green ambitions. And so now I have this gas hot water heater that I despise for, you know, 10 years because I'm not throwing it out before it's ready. You know, we don't eat red meat. I eat lamb occasionally. You know, family had a farm, and so it's a hard one. But red meat's massive. But also, like, food waste. We don't waste food. We do composting. Pretty much those things are massive. Our biggest challenge is flying. My family don't live where I am. But even there, we recently came back from Australia. We flew through Fiji. And part of the reason we did was to break the flight down with two kids, but through the Google Flight Store, we learned there was 30% less carbon taking that route than a direct flight. And so, yes, that was a big carbon investment, but it was, you know, it's the only time my sons met the family in Oz. But we got 2 days in Fiji and it was great. Like, most awesome people on earth, Fijians, and it's a tropical paradise, and save carbon. So, you know, these savings are all around us. But that's a rundown. We've got episodes on most of those topics of climate dads as well.
Yeah, we're going to talk about climate dads in just a second. But I briefly want to shift to artificial intelligence now. And there are a lot of concerns out there about AI these days, and understandably so, in my opinion, you know, from social surveillance, data privacy violations, social manipulation, some job losses, and even concerns around the environmental footprint of AI. But AI can also be a really wonderful tool. For example, you created a custom ChatGPT kids meal mate for busy families a few months ago, didn't you? And I'd love to hear the backstory to that. I picture you at home. It's close to dinner time. You've got two hungry and cranky kids clamoring for some food. And you and your wife are wondering what to whip together quickly to keep the peace and also put something nourishing on their plates. Is that how it played out?
That's pretty valid. Yeah. So AI, yeah. I mean, Brad Smith at Microsoft has this good saying of like tools and weapons. It's the name of his podcast. And like so many things can be tools and weapons, and AI is certainly one of them. And this is, I believe, going to be the greatest disruptive technology of maybe human history, definitely our lifetimes, more so than the internet. And that's coming from someone who's grown up with, you know, the internet, like from its start, was just as I was becoming sentient through to starting my career in early social media. So I do believe AI is going to change everything. And I have so much hope, even though there's, yes, things that we need to manage, many things we're going to need to manage. But on the climate front, I have a huge hope that it's going to help us do things faster for our kids than we'd be able to otherwise. Because of that, I've been playing with it. So back in social media days, I used to say, like, learning social media, because we used to do a lot of trainings. Remember, like, people were really worried about, like, what's a Twitter and what's a podcast and how do I blog and what do you mean people can comment on my business? I used to always say to people, like, you can't learn social media. Like, you can't learn a piano without touching the keys, and you can't learn social media without touching the keyboard. So for me, I've been on like a big AI journey and just trying to use it in as many ways as possible to see the potentials and to see the potential shortfalls firsthand. I got a 4-year-old and 19-month-old, and I'm the cook in the family. And so it's constant food production and trying to think like, oh, what nutrients and what did I shop right? Oh no, that mango is going old. I've got to use that right now. Did I give you just carbs for dinner and have you eaten anything else today? Like, can we do that? But the kids meal maker, like, I've been hacking these ChatGPT bots, and that's why this technology is so powerful. I made it while having lunch. I was like eating a sandwich with one hand and then made the piece. I just, you know, because basically it's just a bit of prompt engineering in the background. Like, and it's a very simple experience, but it just was designed that you could take a photo of the fridge and get meal tips ideas. It also, though, on the other hand, it always seems to think I have turkey in the fridge, something about the prompt. It keeps telling me to like make like a turkey quesadilla, and I don't have turkey. I don't have sliced turkey. And I keep being like, I don't have sliced turkey. It's like, oh, okay, I'm sorry. How about this turkey sandwich? And I'm like, okay. So, you know,
a glitch there.
Well, there's all this stuff, the hallucinations in AI, right? That's what kind of makes it so fascinating. But yeah, it's for me, it's just fun.
Even more than the kids' meal mate, though, I was really excited to see another custom GPT you created, the IPCC Climate Science Helper. And of course, I started playing around with it, and keeping with the food theme, I typed the question, what food should my family eat to be climate friendly? And it put out a bunch of great suggestions. And right. I'm just going to run through those briefly.
Yeah.
The first one was reduce meat consumption, increase plant-based foods. I'm all about that. Minimize food waste, opt for seasonal and local produce, avoid highly processed foods, and support sustainable agriculture. And it also gave supporting information. And then I also asked the question, can I still travel and be climate friendly? And it also gave a bunch of good answers. And it suggested reducing the number of flights you take, especially short haul flights whenever alternatives are available, choosing direct flights, respecting local environments and avoiding activities that are harmful, like disturbing wildlife, damaging coral reefs, or leaving behind waste. And even simple things like conserving resources, like reusing towels, taking shorter showers, avoiding single-use plastics, and carrying a reusable water bottle. So I think this custom GPT that you created is really, really brilliant.
I love hearing that. So the interesting thing about that one, this is part of why I believe there's so much power and potential for climate with these tools. I'll tell you the story about building that. Whilst I was on the Meta team, I was spending a lot of time with climate creators when we still had a climate product team before it was laid off. And part of what we were trying to do was work out the way to like elevate these voices, particularly around climate solutions, right? Getting into that point that people globally really want to know what they can do and don't know what to do. And one of the things I kept hearing from creators, brilliant creators who are really good at communicating climate issues, was they were always worried about having the right facts. They were just worried. They held themselves to such a high standard. And so they would get like a brand deal for like, you know, Trader Joe's sparkling tea. And they would like go and research in depth if that actually is okay to communicate. And they would spend all this time that normally creators would never do because they believed about the purpose. And so something I'd wanted to build for that audience that would have added value would have been something like this, that like a really easy way to access climate knowledge. Now, I thought about that and we would do road mapping and you come up with engineering times and ideas. And I just never was able to stack rank it to get engineer time on. I couldn't build it myself before AI. And I was like, we've only got so many engineers and we've got other stuff to build. Like, I just can't, that would be nice to have, but can't do it. And then OpenAI, ChatGPT announced their plugin store, and I'm not a developer at all. And I realized I could just have a crack at this. And so all I did was I went and got all the best IPCC reports I get my hand on, loaded that in the back end of the GPT, wrote a solid prompt to try to get to really focus on drawing information from those reports, and ship this thing that I would have expected might have been like a, you know, multi-month engineering effort and not worth the time, and shipped it over like a few days. And it does, I do believe it works. It's cool to hear it used for you. It's had some good use. There was like a lot of problems early because I think for gating functions, like you could only get it as a paid user for a while, but now everyone can. So I haven't done another big push on it. I need to have a look. I don't even know how many times it's been used. I did search climate the other day in their plugin store and it was up towards the top, so that was nice. But I need to have a look. Maybe I'll be surprised. And if anyone's listening and wants to try it and give any feedback, that'd be cool to hear too.
Yeah, get in touch with Paul. We're gonna let you know at the end of the podcast how you can reach out to him. But I am not a paid user, and I was able to access this.
Yeah, great. That's
so it's completely accessible to anybody who wants to go out there and use it. And before we move on, I just want to remind all the listeners out there that if you're enjoying this podcast episode, go ahead and send an email with the subject line podcast to team@readywhenstuffhappens.com, and I'll make sure you're notified as soon as the next episode drops. But we talked about climate dads, or we mentioned climate dads a couple of minutes ago, and I want you to share with the listeners how you started that, why you started it, how it's going. I know you just finished the first season of it and a bunch of episodes out there. And even the intro is super cute. So I encourage everybody to listen to it. But tell us about that. It sounds like a real passion project.
Yeah, it was. So my friend Ryan Hamilton, who I do Climate Dads with, a fellow Aussie, he lives in New York. We got connected through another mutual friend, John Tess Parker. And in our first chat, he'd been working for the Environmental Defense Fund for many years. And, you know, we had a lot of crossover with mutual friends, and both were like new dads working in climate who cared about the issue. And I remember we'd both seen from Heatmap News, which is an awesome climate-focused publication. They had this piece called Climate Dads, The Rise of the Climate Dads. And it was some research they'd done which showed that like dads of kids were really pro all kinds of climate policies. Even if they weren't like environmentalists, they just like TVs and like to have bike lanes around and, you know, cared about the clean air for their kids. And we really resonated on that being true for us. And we decided to chat about it. And so we're both very passionate about the mission of the show, which is how you can be a better dad whilst doing good things for the earth. So a lot of it's like just those little pieces about things we do in our life and then trying to go find people smarter than us that think deeper on the topic to get in there. We got a season up. We're trying to find time for more. It's hard with the job and the two small kids and time zones with Ryan, but we're eager to do more and we're eager to connect with climate dads of all stripes. Climate mums too. We just, you know, the blokes is what we are. So that's a niche we focused on.
Great. You recently put out a call to environmental and climate developers to share examples of projects helping the planet and getting helped along by GitHub Copilot. What are some of the things you heard?
Yeah. So I'm a few months now into leading sustainability at GitHub, and at GitHub, we're the home for all developers. So it's software for any developer out there. And really these days with the help of AI, everyone can be a developer. You know, I think I'll be a developer soon. And that's something I never expected from my more communications oriented brain than engineering brain. And GitHub Copilot is the core product that's enabling so many things. And so part of what I've been doing as I start the new job is just to size the space and understand what's happening as much as possible and understand where can we help. And at GitHub, we've got an aspiration with our sustainability to have impact beyond our operations. So very focused alongside our parent company, Microsoft, on reducing our own emissions and ensuring that we, you know, use 100% renewable energy and are water positive in our operations and hit a carbon negative by 2030 target. And that's a huge amount of work. But also, how can we go beyond that and how can we help developers accelerate climate progress? And so that's one of the things that I've been digging around on, and particularly like a lot of these shops in the climate space might be just a few devs, or there might be a couple of maintainers on an open source project. But there's a great resource out there called Open Source Sustainable Tech, and they have a repo repository on GitHub where they list out climate open source projects. And they've got something like 1,700 different projects there that are all sorts of things, from open source projects that help map electricity around the world. Like you can go to electricitymaps.org and you can see what kind of makeup your own grid is that you're in right now, like how much of it is gas versus solar. There's tech to monitor for wildfires. There's tech to monitor biodiversity. There's tech on water. Like you pick your area. It's kind of amazing. And so how can we help all of that scale faster and have more impact? And Copilot's probably going to be a key way. But I was talking to my my friends over at Charity Water, Jasdeep, the director of engineering over there, who actually, I was his hiring manager, geez, probably about 17 or 18 years ago, and he's amazing, one of the best engineers I ever worked with. And he was saying that for their small dev team at Charity Water, Copilot was speeding everything up. And that's wow. That's how it works, right? It's just a really great partner to your code. The human's still in the driver's seat, and Copilot helps developers do things much faster and hopefully takes their, you know, time away from the sort of drudgery of the work and allows them to do the more interesting work. The other area that I think is going to be really interesting is there's this emerging green software movement, and that is how any developer can make any project carbon aware or more energy efficient. The internet's emissions are not small in the world. You know, I think in the US they're about 5% of emissions overall is IT. And so I think there's also some really cool potential that things like Copilot will be able to help make code greener and give you suggestions on how to do things like that. But that's all the stuff that's in front of us.
On Threads, you were talking about reading Ministry of the Future, a science fiction book about climate change. And you said that the first chapter is so terrifying because it feels so true.
Yeah.
It brings me back to the point we were talking about earlier about the power of storytelling to affect impactful change. And in your work, going back to your early days at Charity Water, you've always used storytelling to encourage and inspire people to take positive action. Mm. What are the stories we should be telling within our neighborhoods and communities to get people to do things that help these communities become stronger and better?
It's a very all-encompassing read. Like it goes off into all sorts of territories. It gets a bit, your head starts to spin a few chapters in, but the first chapter, it's a story about a major climate disaster in India. And from my experience, it read as like true potential near-term future in a horrifying way. I had to put the book down for like 4 days after the first chapter. Yeah, I was reading, I was planning on like getting started and I was really enjoying it, but I finished one chapter and I was just like, I'm done for now. And I had to
This is the Prince of Positivity.
Yeah. It really knocked me. One of the things we used to say at Charity Water was that inspiration was the most important part of our digital strategy. And it really was true. And you couldn't put a like hard metric on these things, but we need hearts and minds, and nothing inspires like a big story. Because like all these changes are in front of us, but they do require work. And another thing we used to always say at Charity Water, where people are good, but people are lazy, and people are just real busy. There's just so much going on in your life. Like you probably want to have green power at home if you haven't done it already. It's just like, how do I research that? I mean, ChatGPT can probably do it pretty fast for you, or another AI service. Storytelling can inspire people to make those changes. So I think inspiration is the key. I think particularly in the climate space, like the research shows people are worried and nervous, and there's actually some like kind of negative climate doomism down there. Once you get into the solutions, that's when you can feel positivity. When you absorb the science shows we're in a pretty grim spot. But when you start to see all the solutions and all the energy that the climate community is making, and really any job can be a climate job, and any person can make changes both at home and through their job that are really meaningful, like we can do this in a way that creates a better present now and a better future later. So I just think, yeah, storytelling and inspiration is a massive part of it because we need change. Like inertia just means status quo, and status quo means we're producing huge amounts of carbon and we're creating a world that's going to be unsustainable for our future generations.
I think you're absolutely right. We need to give people hope and show them the way forward rather than talking doom and gloom. That's not to say that things aren't serious. They are serious, but we are still at a point where we can affect positive change. I'm glad that's why you were talking about these wonderful things that technology and AI in particular are enabling us to do right now. Before we go, I really want people to know where they can find you and how they can follow your work.
Yeah. I'm most active on LinkedIn these days. I'm Paul with two L's Young. So the second L is great for search engine optimization of all sorts. You won't find the English singer of the 1970s with one L. So yeah, LinkedIn is the most active place. I feel like that's where I can share a lot of climate stuff without annoying all my friends too much. But yes, I'd encourage people to follow me on LinkedIn. You can follow Climate Dad's Pod on Instagram. We've got some stuff up there, and once we get some traction on season two, there'll be more popping in there.
Fantastic. Paul, thank you so very much for having taken the time today.